Good evening. This is the Pacifica National Board's Programming Committee. Tonight is Tuesday, May 29th, and we are convening our meeting at about 8:55 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm not going to call the roll now. I'm just going to indicate who is on the call with us currently. We have Bonnie Simmons, Attila Nage, Serene Roberts, Wendy Schrell, Teresa Allen, Phil Jackson, Rob Robinson, Gail Dixon, and Dan Logan. Is there anyone on the call now whose name I omitted? Okay, we have 9 members. We have a quorum. Tonight, I would like to abbreviate the agenda so that we can cover 2 topics. The first topic that I would like to cover is a discussion of the policy which was put in place in January by the executive that governs the way Pacifica operations deal with the FCC indecency, obscenity, profanity guidelines, regulations, I'm sorry. That policy is currently in effect. This committee was asked by the Pacifica National Board to solicit comments on the implementation of the policy and then to report back to the PNB. Bear in mind, the policy which I've circulated to everyone here has been in effect and will be in effect until we recommend and the Pacifica National Board adopts some changes. The second item of agenda that I would like to cover this evening is establishing a recurring date for this meeting, which in our previous meeting we failed to establish. And I would like to, it is now 9 o'clock, I would like to recommend that we conclude this meeting no later than 10 o'clock tonight. Is that acceptable to everyone?
It is to me. This is Gail.
Thank you.
I think that's good, Rob. I could point one thing out, that we also have Nathan Moore, the National Programming Coordinator, on the call.
Thank you very much for pointing that out. Yes, our Network Programming Coordinator, Nathan Moore, is with us. Thank you, Nathan.
Okay.
Okay, unless I hear any objections, we're going to go directly into everybody sharing their perspectives on the policy, on the FCC's regulations dealing with indecency, obscenity, and profanity on the air. Would anyone like to begin that discussion?
Yes, this is Dan.
Dan Logan from WPFW. Thank you, Dan.
The first thing I'd like to say is that obscenity should be removed from the title of this policy because it has nothing to do with obscenity and it's very confusing to people.
Mm-hmm.
Obscenity is a different concept, and when you put that in there, you have people thinking about Allen Ginsberg and Howell, and in fact, although Howell was thought to be, ruled not obscene, we cannot play it on the air without bleeping out a lot of words.
Okay. Can I just ask you a quick question about that, Dan?
Yeah.
The policy as we've received it, and I have not heard any of the discussions, the detailed discussions with our FCC counsel, John Krigler, but the policy that we've gotten from the executive does reference obscenity. For example, it indicates that fines for obscenity, for obscenities on the air, can go from $32,000 to, I think, $325,000.
Correct.
So the policy does refer to obscenity, and I guess if I'm sure what you say is right, but it seems to me that we're then going to need to correct the misuse of the term in the policy.
Well, one way of doing that is simply
or explain
to say,
the confusion.
One way of doing that is to simply say obscenities.
McKenzie, does your mother know you came down?
Okay.
This is Wendy. Maybe I can help.
Well, let's let Dan shoot
I'm
his...
I'm done.
Oh, okay. Wendy.
Well, all I was going to say was that there are historically different classes. Indecency and obscenity are different things. Indecency is regulated by the FCC, and now we have this new thing called profanity, which is also part of FCC. They've added in a separate category called profanity, which covers things like Bono at the whatever awards and things like that, that never really in there. Before, they used to be part of indecency, but obscenity is actually enforced by a different department of the government. It's the State Department, or, you know, it's an actual criminal thing to have obscenity on the radio. So I agree that this policy probably shouldn't be referring to obscenity in the same way, because obscenity is never allowed any time of day or night.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, well, don't, never mind. I was going to try and clarify some of Pacifica's earlier cases into one category or the other, but I think the Jerker case was an obscene case, not an indecent case. But anyway, it's, you know, we are really talking about, that's when they're talking about, probably Nathan could actually add more on this than me, but when we're talking about not allowing obscenity during Safe Harbor, well, it's already not allowed during Safe Harbor. Indecency is, and profanity is. So maybe it would be helpful if Nathan would talk about that for a second, if you'd call on him. I don't know. Is he there?
Nathan? Oh, Nathan.
All right. Well, I'm just going to tell you that there are different categories.
Sorry, I was on mute. I forgot.
did someone else just come on the line?
Pardon me?
I thought someone else checked in.
Has a new member of the programming committee?
Lisa.
Lisa. Yay.
Oh, actually, I got on 5 minutes ago, but I accidentally kicked myself off.
Okay,
all right, Lisa,
great.
Davis.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. What Wendy describes is pretty accurate. You know, there's basically three categories of language violation: obscenity, which is never allowed; indecency, and profanity, which are, you know, that do are governed by a safe harbor between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m.
This is Gail. What is the definition of obscenity?
Sure. It's basically. It's right on the FCC website. I don't have it in front of me. Let me give you an example. Profanity is basically, you know, words or epithets or language that are profane in some fashion. We're talking here about a lot of the seven deadly words. Indecency is when you start referencing body fluids, sexual activity, and obscenity is when such indecency rises to another level. Rises to a level that appeals to the prurient interest, I think is the phrasing, and really is just meant to shock and titillate. That's the notion behind obscenity versus indecency. It's obviously a very gray line, a very hazy line between those. There's a crude way to put it. I mean, profanity is, you know, I don't really need to go there exactly, but the idea is to you know, depictions of sexual or excretory activity in patently offensive ways is considered obscenity. Simply referencing, you know, a crude way of having sex or something would be more of an indecency.
Can you not have obscenity unless you have indecency?
Pretty much. My understanding is that obscenity is kind of like indecency squared, or indecency, you know, like a stronger version. I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to say, to be perfectly honest.
Isn't the problem with the policy, though, is that it treats all three of the things as if they were the same, and the impact of this policy is almost to say, don't ever do anything that anybody could ever construe as any of these things, and it says that with reference to the safe harbor. Harbor between 6 and 10 p.m. in particular. So
what the policy doesn't have in it is a definition. The policy does need some definitions. I'll give you that for sure. And you know, but basically it is true that the policy is saying don't do anything that is any of these. None of them are allowed. I think it could clarify what safe harbor is and what is, you know, allowed during safe harbor, and what's advisable, you know, during safe harbor, what's not advisable during safe harbor. I mean, at this point, we're getting into kind of a handbook rather than a policy. But, I mean, to say, you know, look, a certain amount of indecency and profanity is okay overnight, but not during the day. There's you know, none of it's allowed until, you know, before 10 p.m.
Point of information.
Lisa, yes.
This might sound like an obvious question, but please explain to me, especially somebody who only had like a couple of hours of sleep last night, the safe harbor again, safe harbor meaning?
Oh, sure. Safe harbor is an FCC term that a station can air some profanity or indecency between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. The idea is that there aren't children listening during those times. You know, it's kind of a faulty idea, and I think they know it too, but it's kind of a bone they throw to broadcast outlets so that you can get away with some of the latest songs or whatever that that have profanity in them during those hours.
Okay, but maybe because I was just coming on the call, I thought I heard you say, but I could have misheard, that some language that should never be used, or is that correct, or...?
It depends. The line between indecency and obscenity is a hazy line. And the FCC, you pretty much have to study FCC case law to figure out where they put the line at any given moment, and that line changes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really, I mean, without you starting to get into examples, it's kind of hard to say exactly.
Right.
Rob?
Yes, Wendy.
The point here is that we need a policy that covers our network because we want to protect our licenses first and foremost, and we also want to protect against having individual cases blow up into big political problems. And so, you know, that's what we need to be doing here, and I think that's what the managers tried to do. And so, you know, I study a lot of other community radio stations, and everybody is just horrified by, you know, they don't tell you. I've been to a million of these John Krigler workshops by now, and they are definitely erring on the side of caution, but it's nobody knows how far to err. And so I think what some of the comments that we've heard from our own people that bothered to comment is that ending up self-censoring in a way that might be damaging to what Pacifica's, you know, mission really is. Most of the FCC case law on these subjects has been determined by Pacifica. You know, whether we fought George Carlin case and lost, or the safe harbor rules that are in place now keep going back. I looked into it, you know, and they go back and forth depending on what court it's in at the time. And Pacifica has been instrumental in this, but nobody knows is the point. And so we really have to train our programmers. And, I mean, I think one of our station has a couple of FCC complaints pending against it already, and we really need to protect against. I mean, one thing that they always say in these workshops is that if you can show that you, I mean, talking of us as the management of the network, if you can show that you took some steps to try and fix it, then they might go easier on you, but nobody really knows.
This is Gail. I guess my biggest question is, how close do we go, or do we want to go to getting to the point where the issue of freedom of speech is just absolutely thrown out of the window?
That's the question.
No, I know,
yeah.
But I mean.
Well, I mean, this is Nathan. What I'm going to do is send you around definitions that I'm picking up from the FCC website of what these things are. I mean, I think questions of free speech are great. I think we should absolutely sign on to amicus briefs and you know, co-sign in lawsuits against the FCC when there are some that come up. Good work to be done there. I don't think the way to fight it is to play a bunch of songs that say fuck. I think, you know, the way to fight it is through ways that don't jeopardize our licenses.
Yeah, I don't think there's any disagreement on that point with anybody here. I think the question, the feeling that I have, for example, is that I feel that this...
Hello?
Okay, this is the Pacifica National Board Programming Committee call after having been summarily bumped off of our stream. I'm going to check to see who's back on the call. Sarvrindawa, Bonnie Simmons.
Yep.
Attila Nage.
Yep.
Margaret Prescott, Sherna Gluck, Kimberly King, Lisa Davis.
Here.
Serene Roberts.
I'm here.
Kathy Davis, Wendy Schrell.
Here.
Teresa Allen. Phil Jackson.
Still here.
Rob Robinson is here. Gail Dixon.
Here.
Dan Logan.
Here.
Lori Taguma. Nathan Moore.
I'm here.
Okay.
Teresa, back on.
Thank you, Teresa. Gail, I think you have the floor. You
want to
pick up where you left off, or do you recall? If not, Serene is next in the stack.
No, I know it's a very simplistic question, but for all the conversation, I'm just, my question still goes back to the free speech issue. And I know you, Nathan, mentioned doing things different ways. And, you know, I think I need some discussion about those different ways.
Okay.
Well, but basically, the free speech that people talk about on the radio tends to deal with free speech in journalism. Is that not correct, Nathan?
That's my understanding, yeah. I mean, the fact is, because of the way, I mean, you can look at case law and various legal maneuvers over the last 100 years, broadcast outlets have the least free speech of any media there is in terms of language restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's kind of what we're stuck with. But, yeah, I mean, free speech in terms of journalistic, in terms of persuasive arguing, whatever, you know, those are pretty much unregulated.
I think the problem becomes that when we're basically Mirandizing interviewees that come on the air at Pacifica and warning them not to say, you know, not to say, use profane language and stuff like that, then we've kind of lost the ability to speak honestly to our audiences and to the people that we want to broadcast to them. But that's kind of a separate subject. I think one of the things we should do is educate our on-air staff about the uses of free speech in broadcasting, but that's only part of the issue here. So since time is an issue, Serene was next on the stack. Serene, could you go ahead?
Hi. I gather we're discussing the FCC policy as has been distributed. And there are a number of problems with it as it currently exists. And I'm sorry, I don't have access to my notes now. But
everyone received the USOC comments on that several times, Serene.
Okay. But I'm right. I'm in a car. I don't even have access to.
I just want you to know that everybody in this committee has seen those comments.
Okay, but I'm not sure though that everyone has really absorbed. We're in fact talking about, as far as the policy goes, essentially they're saying there's no safe harbor. So we have Pacifica being even more repressive than the FCC. We have one person, let's say, engaging in a violation, and an entire program, which could consist of, three or four or five hosts being penalized. We have Pacifica not even wanting people to know when something has been censored, saying, pluck it out. You can't beep it and don't flip the word. Just remove it without even a warning that says, this has been censored. So it's really troubling to me. I understand we need to be careful, but there is, I maintain, a difference between being careful and being, I don't want to use the term cowardly. And to my knowledge, mitigation is not even a factor that is considered. There's been no general training of the staff, and I'm not talking about the ability to listen to a recorded presentation. I'm talking about an opportunity to speak and raise examples and to learn and to benefit from being in the room with other programmers and with someone who's really knowledgeable about this. And it seems to me that training should come before any sort of punitive behavior. And the policy, as has been handed down, is mostly punitive. So just those are my off the bat comments.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to share their observations with the committee?
I have another one, but if anybody else wants to speak that hasn't spoken.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Well, I absolutely agree with Serene that there needs to be that we need to ensure that all of our, since we're dealing with unpaid staff, many of whom aren't, most of whom aren't there at the same time as when the paid staff is there, that we need to have a way to make sure that everyone knows about this stuff. At the same time, I'm going to say that just saying, well, I didn't know, isn't going to be good enough if we're gambling with the licenses of the Pacifica Foundation that we know are so important. So I absolutely agree that it is the program director's job at each of our stations to make sure that all the producers that work under them know about this policy, sign off on this policy. At our station, we actually made it mandatory that you could not go on the air unless you did. Same with the payola, plugola thing that we did. I don't know if it was kept up and if they actually, did chase down every person that was on in the middle of the night and make sure that they signed off that they knew what you can and can't say on the radio, but that is absolutely essential, and that's our job. That's one thing that that the Pacifica National Board can do is, ask the ED to mandate to the program directors that you must train these people in this policy. We had a meeting at the PNB with John Craigler where he did volunteer to go around to the radio stations at minimal expense and give them another training. I mean, they did this 2 years ago or 3 years ago when the FCC policy changed, or I don't know if it, I'm sorry, the Congress voted that the fines would increase to $1 gazillion. They sent these people around to all the radio stations. So I'm very happy to vote for them to do that again if people didn't get it the first time. But I would say that, the only person that can do this at the stations is the program director at each station. So I think that the main concerns that we have here are what Serene said about safe harbor. I think that what our policy here says is mislabeled obscenity. I don't know if they mean it to be indecency, but it's ridiculous for us to go beyond the safe harbor of the FCC. I know that, we're dealing with an awful lot of people that have, the foundation's well-being in their hands with every single second that they're on the air. The thing about not being able to bleep stuff is over the top. Some of the most entertaining things that are the most interesting things you can do are how you handle a bleep. And I understand, you know, my husband does a lot of editing in radio, and so I understand that you can edit something and have people still think they heard the thing, so we could instruct them to go a little bit farther on the bleeping. But to say that you can't even bleep, you have to take it out completely, is I agree with you, Suck, on that.
Okay. We haven't heard from Bonnie or Attila. Anything?
You know, look. The utmost importance here is that we protect these licenses, and I think everybody on the call has pretty much said that and agreed to that. I agree that the policy as it's put out would be enhanced were it to have some definitions here, and I think Nathan had mentioned that earlier too. But as I'm reading this, you know, it does have language in it about each station providing education about indecency, profanity, and obscenity, and also that the station management needs to be able to deal with these things, in some cases, on a case-by-case basis, because there are different circumstances. It's different when... you take something that is pre-recorded and you just have been lazy and haven't, listened to it ahead of time and auditioned it and go ahead and play it and then compound it by not using the delay. And I know that KPFA has a 24-hour day delay now, and I assume that everyone else has one too now also. But that's not the same situation as when a guest comes on the air, in a talk show, and something is said and hopefully is then caught by the board op. But we really do all have to take responsibility here. You know, it's just not worth it. And we're not the only stations that are grappling with this. Everybody is grappling with this right now. The FCC has, in a certain sense, caused a chilling effect by having language that I think is very difficult for any of us to really follow, and they contradict themselves here. You know, with the ruling on the Bono case, it was supposed to be considered okay if it doesn't dwell or repeat, sexual or excretory matters at length, and then they went ahead and acted on that with one use. So we're all sort of grappling, trying to figure out how to do this. And indeed, although I guess you can call me cowardly on this, but I really think that taking the extra step of precaution while we're all trying to get our grasp here is not a bad idea. We're dealing with a lot of people on each of our staffs, and many of them have regular jobs. They're not in the station all the time, and you know, we need to do whatever we have to do to be sure that we're going to err on the side of caution here. So, the thing that I'm the most just personally affected by and kind of puzzled by is I'm not quite sure what the answer to being unable to bleep something is, because as a music programmer, that makes it tough. If you've got, you know, one word in a song and you've deemed that the song is, important enough and good enough that you really want to play it, but being unable to bleep it, it's kind of hard to ever do it. But really, as far as I'm concerned, and I know that I'm kind of conservative about this stuff because of the penalties involved and the fact that I don't think that it makes sense for us to not be able to put out our important messages through Pacifica because we've, gotten ourselves hung in some thicket of obscenity and profanity and indecency, I sort of vote on the side of maintaining this really conservative view on this right now.
It would be a dumb way to go down, you're right.
It's a dumb way to go down, and it would be a real shame, you know, that all of the, that what we're really there to do gets hung in some, you know, mess around this.
Attila, did you have something that you wanted to...
Yes. I agree with Bonnie, and I'm on the side of caution as well. And I think it's important that each person that walks through that studio door has a policy in hand, and that there is training for all the... And pre-recorded programs, you need to be screened. And each DJ or announcer, producer needs to review their material before it goes on the air. I mean, the FCC has these rules. We have to abide by them, and I hate to see Pacifica go down, too. So that's my encouragement, is that we do hand everybody who walks through that studio door the policy, make sure it's understood before they go on the air.
Rob, can I take a shot at this?
Who is that, please?
Phil Jackson.
Oh, Phil, thank you. Yes, please.
Yeah, I'm going to take the other side. I don't like to err on the side of being conservative. I know the license is in jeopardy, but as far as I'm concerned, if you make a rule, the onus is on you to specify what it is you do or do not want.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that we can rally other broadcasters together in a lawsuit against the FCC to sue them for a definition of each of the things that they don't want us to do? They've put the burden on us to create a list of things that we think they don't want us to do, and we can curse in ancient Aramaic and get fined. It says that language is not relevant. Accidents are not relevant. We could put together a blooper reel of politicians and prominent persons who have violated the FCC's guidelines near open mics or in moments of excitement. I don't think that we should bear the burden, because we will always err on the conservative side and say less than we could if we put the burden on the FCC to specify exactly what it was they wanted.
Well, Phil, can I ask you a quick question? And would you be willing to... You know, to, for example, work with some people at the ACLU. I mean, I think there's some people that are very active in KPFT in the ACLU, like George Barnstone. Would you be willing to check to see whether they'd be interested in something like that, and maybe touch base with Wendy to see what some of the other groups like Grassroots Radio and Prometheus, you know, if somebody's already doing something, we should get more active. But the other possibility is to explore bringing some kind of a suit with a group like ACLU.
I'd be more than happy to.
Rob, this is Wendy.
Yes, Wendy.
Just to let you know, as I said, I've been through several of these meetings and workshops on the subject, and, you know, what we're all still waiting for is rulings. Right now we've got the commercial media fighting these things, this Janet Jackson thing.
Correct.
And the Bono thing, well, I guess the Bono thing is already decided, but there are already challenges to this, and so that's part of what our council is always telling us. Look, we just got to kind of wait until those things are decided, so then we can know what to do. But we could also join with them and let you use their money and throw our name into it at the same time. I'm totally with everybody. Let's fight this stuff. But we can't fight this while our own stations are letting fuck slip out on the radio.
But we could also find a sympathetic judge to issue an injunction against FCC issuance of fines until the issue is settled.
And I'd love to have that. let me give you a
Nathan,
quick...
yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Just wanted to suggest that... or actually, not suggest, but I think actually the FCC in another lawsuit lost the ability to come up with rules ahead of time because it constituted basically pre-censorship. but somehow they managed to maintain the authority to come up with this convoluted set of rules that can only be discovered after litigation. Now, that, I could be wrong on that, but that's my understanding of how it works. I'd love it if someone on this call would actually contact the ACLU about that and see if there's or other folks that might know more about it and see what can be done. I also had a couple thoughts on moving us forward of you know, possible amendments to the policy, but I don't need...
Let me just I wrote some things down, and let me just recap some of the issues that I saw, and then I'd like to go exactly in that direction with you, Nathan. So if you indulge me for a minute.
You bet.
Yeah, I also believe that everybody in the network I've spoken to wants to respect and take care of the licenses, but I think that what's necessary is that we provide useful guidelines for on-air staff, and unfortunately, I really don't think this policy provides that type of useful guideline. Some of the things that I think are essential, for example, is that I think we should require on-air staff to sign off on the policy, indicating that they've read it and agree to follow these guidelines. I have no sense of station by station how many people have actually been to the trainings that Mr. Krigler has done, how many have received the materials and understand them. We really don't know that. Secondly, I don't know whether all of our stations have actually got the audio logging and storage capacity. So if, for example, somebody forgets to edit a nasty word out of a Steve Earle song and the FCC wants to levy a fine and the producer says, no, we edited that out of the song when we played it, but we can't go back and produce the actual documentation of the show, that's going to be a problem for us, and I'm not sure that we've done that. Related to that, I don't know that the seven-second delay is in place at all of the stations, John. Last I heard, it wasn't at least one station I knew about. Additionally, I really think that the lack of definitions on what obscenity is and indecency and how they apply to radio is not clear in this policy. Certainly the policy did not make clear how the safe harbor time period can be used and cannot be used. It simply says don't use it. Additionally, I think it would be useful for on-air programmers to know the scale of fines that's in effect for different types of violations of these regulations. I also think that we should be very clear so that people understand how free speech, you know, applies to radio and how it does not. And I would like to see, for example, as we've said, a case study of when bleeping is insufficient. I really think we need to understand that if we want people to do something else. They have to know what it is that they're supposed to do. If we're going to be required to tell people that we interview in the street, off-site, or in studio, then we're almost going to have something like a Miranda statement that we give to people, because we can't expect, you know, everybody that's conducting an interview on the air or out in the street to be able to explain to somebody what they're doing. There has to be something that's short and succinct and explains that, and we don't have it yet. Secondly, to go ahead, I really think that we need to have some kind of a schedule that can assign penalties not so much to the show but to the individual. For example, I think that our stations need to be clear on whether the violations of the FCC regulations that take place at their station are inadvertent, whether they're due to production errors, or whether they're deliberate. And the way we're assigning penalties now, although I understand that they're not penalties, they're remedies, I don't think that the penalties necessarily do that. I'm very concerned that the network programming coordinator gets given responsibility for all this. In my view, either the GMs or the PDs ought to be reporting on these instances on either a monthly or a quarterly basis until we feel like we're out of the woods. I'm very concerned that there is that this policy suggests that any penalties should be what they call discipline should be levied by the station. My experience in Pacifica is that
we don't use common standards network-wide. So to say that these things are this serious, and then to say, but we're going to let each station come up with their own discipline system, to me is basically to accept the fact that there is going to be inequity in the way these things are implemented. And I think that there has to be a regularly scheduled annual training at every one of the stations, and there also needs to be some sort of a call-in or a conference time when programmers can ask Mr. Krigler about specific cases in point. I think that many of the things that are included in the notes that are attached to this policy could be fleshed out into workable guidelines, but they haven't been yet. And so, again, that's my major concern, is that what we have here is not going to be a helpful document so that on-air staff know how to avoid these problems. And I think that's what we should be concerned about. So having said that, Nathan, what is your thought on where we should go?
Sure, Rob. You had a lot of info there. A number of those things overlap with things I was going to say, not all. I think in clause one of the policy, I think we definitely need some definitions in there of profanity, indecency, and obscenity, and when safe harbor applies to which. I think the comments from the USOC document about abolishing safe harbor for all stem from a lack of clarity on definitions there. And really, I mean, I don't think this policy is intended to abolish safe harbor for profanity. On the second point, I think we do need some technical clarity, some clarity on technical specifics about bleeping and omitting words or phrases that may be considered obscene or indecent or profane, and whether whether a partial bleep or no bleep at all. You know, my interpretation of it was that you can't just like bleep over something, but or do a partial bleep, but you could fill the space of a word with 3,000 hertz tone or something, if that's what you really want to do. But I don't know. That's I think we could use some clarity there.
Mm-hmm.
I think on section 6, clause 6, there was some concern about that I've heard a couple times now about suspending a whole program versus just like the one person who's responsible. I think there we need to make some clarity as well between whether I mean, if it's a, for example, a rotating host situation where you've got host one and host two that host program X every other week. Well, you know, host one doesn't have any editorial control over what host two does. They're not a collective. But I think there are collective situations very often in our broadcast operations where the editorial responsibility is shared collectively, and so I think the discipline would be shared collectively as well in those cases. And then in terms of disciplinary measures, there's a flexibility there on the part of staff, I think, to be flexible on where we go with that and setting up something that makes sense for people. Then there's a lot of questions that Rob brought up, and I think some that I also have here that aren't so much about what's in the policy itself, but about the execution of the policy. I want to just sort of be clear about the difference there between what's sort of the guidelines and what the execution of the policy is. You know, obviously execution of the policy needs to involve good training, regular education about it, distribution of the policy, including perhaps sign-offs from programmers. But also that we need to have some sort of handbook, and it doesn't have to be a big document necessarily, but something that explains what's okay to air, not okay to air, and what's the gray zone, where you really need to get the okay of your program director if you want to go with something in the gray zone. With examples. And plus also maybe some history of free speech on the radio. That's my comments, I think. It's just basically some clarity situations.
This is Wendy.
Wendy?
In response to what you said, Rob, I don't think anyone is putting out violations deliberately. None of us are. But they do happen, and they still are recorded by the FCC if someone makes a complaint. And as to what I think you said this too, Rob, about you don't know if we could prove we didn't do it. Well, I think all of our stations, except for maybe one in D.C., is now archiving all of our shows. So that is also can be used against us, but it's also for our own protection to prove
mm-hmm.
we didn't do something. Because mm-hmm. I sent to the PNB, somebody put this on the Good Life board, that, look, you can just go to this website and make an FCC complaint. It was like the easiest thing I ever saw. And the person complaining, that's one of the changes in the law. The person complaining no longer has to provide the tape that it happened. The station has to prove that it didn't happen. So as for everybody asking about, you know, we need these definitions, what I'm telling you is through the number of these workshops I've been through that the FCC won't even give you these definitions. Maybe you can get a general definition, but they just say, well, whatever might upset sensible person at a certain time, and it used to be that you could go by whatever area it was and how the political mindset of that group was at the time, but now it's no, it's just any, you can, you know, judge New York or L.A. on what somebody in the Midwest might think. So we're not going to get any definitions. They're never going to give you any hard and set answers on what is a violation. And the whole point here is that if they do decide to impose a fine on us, it could bankrupt us. We can't hardly even make our budgets the way they are now. As for suspending the whole program, when it's just one person who did something wrong, I asked for support from this national network when we had a 20-person collective here in Houston that was suspended because two of its people, one week and one another week, accidentally let something through. And I didn't get much support, and I agree with you. That's horrible. And but at the same time, it still is like we're putting our whole lifeblood, our licenses, and the state of the world in the hands of a lot of people who might not be getting this training, and might, you know, we need to go back to what we were talking about. We need to mandate training for all the stations. Have people sign up on stuff. I suggest that we change this bleeping rule because it's ridiculous. Safe Harbor should adhere to what the FCC says, but it's really only the program directors that we can hold responsible. Well, we can hold the managers responsible for making sure that the program directors give this training to all the volunteers, but it's, you know, that's what we have to do. We can't just sit here and go, well, we need to fight this in court when we're letting stuff out on our own and setting ourselves up. So I agree with all of you guys, but I am still saying that we need to tighten up our own ship. We can't just say, oh, you can't ever punish me because that's, you know, mean.
Rob?
Yeah, yeah. Can I get on the stack?
I think Serene was next. Serene, were you on the stack?
I am.
And then Lisa?
This was Gail.
Oh, Gail. I'm sorry. Serene, then Gail. Oh,
it was both Gail and Lisa. And I'm actually willing to wait for my turn on the stack. I'm just asking that Nathan repeat his rationale for punishing entire collectives?
Just that if there's collective editorial responsibility, that disciplinary measures are also collective.
And how do you determine that? How do you determine whether or not they have a collective responsibility?
Well, there's some programs that are organized as, you know, collectives. They call themselves collectives. They operate as collectives. They have collective meetings. They produce collectively.
Right, but it does not necessarily mean that every part of every person who's part of the collective is therefore responsible for everything that goes onto the show. People do have a division of labor very often, and if in fact it's a collective, but let's say person X is hosting and person Y was supposed to have edited the sound, persons A, B, C, D, E, and F weren't even present, but the show gets punished. That's not reasonable.
Well, I mean, persons A, B, C, D, E, and F then should make their collective follow the rules. I mean, that's collective.
What you're saying does not make sense. It is in fact.
Oh, no.
Different.
The thing is.
Okay, Nathan, we can't speak at the same time, so I'm sorry.
Let me finish.
I'm sorry?
I said then I can finish. If you have collective responsibility for editorial decisions, you have collective responsibility for what happens when it airs. I mean, that's. You can't be half collective and half not, is what I'm saying.
Well, no, that's I don't think well, I don't know how many collectives you've worked in, but that is actually not how that works.
Thank you.
You may have a meeting at which you decide, okay, we're going to do these three topics this month, and these two people are going to host the show, and those two people are going to host the other show, whatever the case is, and you sort of divvy things up like that. Someone comes to the air, and either because they have a live guest who slips, or because they have a piece of recorded sound, which I agree is an entirely different thing, coming to the air with a pre-recorded thing that is a violation. But, you know, stuff happens, and it comes on. And what also happens is that people hear what they want to hear. But you come to the air with something, and, again, two people are responsible for that particular product on that particular afternoon. However, because the collective made a decision about the topic and the collective decided, okay, well, you guys are on here and we'll do this, the entire program gets punished, and you see that as radically different from two people who simply alternate?
Yeah, because one has editorial say and the other doesn't. I mean, you know, I don't need to fight about it with you. It's just a suggestion.
Well, I'm not interested in fighting. I'm simply saying that that position is inconsistent. In either case, the people who are not present and who did not participate in that particular production should not be affected.
Okay. If Serene doesn't have more to say, then it's Lisa, then Gail.
And Dan.
And Dan. Okay. Lisa, Gail, Dan, and then we should decide where we're going.
I'd like to get on stack two, Rob. After
okay, that. Lisa, Gail, Dan, Bonnie.
And Teresa?
Lisa,
hello?
Gail, Dan, Bonnie. Okay.
And Teresa.
I got that, Teresa.
Thank
then
you.
We're going to have to decide what to do at the end of Teresa's statement so that we can move forward. Lisa, please.
I just have to say I can't help when I hear everything that's going on, just think about some of the fights that we're having in the community, not anything specifically dealing with Pacifica, but in terms of making sure that our voices are heard, people of color, black people are heard, they're being so eliminated and obliterated and whited out from mainstream media and every access to media, and yet we can't get the FCC, no matter how many letters we write to them, to say, please come in here and look at this. Let's do some policies about this, because we are being hurt. We're being hurt by these offensive images that continue to be, you know, on the air, and on the FCC doesn't even respond to us about that. And we all know, many of us, many instances of hate radio and people using the most violent, derogatory speech about people of color, and that just doesn't seem to bother the FCC that much. I just had to say that much. But I was just going to ask, and you all may have discussed this already, but would it be maybe good to get some programming to have a, you know, like a, I don't know, a committee of the whole or whatever with some producers and programmers or PDs just to, because sometimes we can talk about, well, we think this should be done and stuff like that, but they maybe get some more, you know, hands-on about implementation and what they think. Just a suggestion.
I'm trying to be clear on specifically what you want to do, Lisa.
No, I'm saying this should be... And should we have this discussion
like a round table?
Yeah, sort of. Just with the program directors and stuff like that. Before
like, it'd be great if we had some discussions like this produced for on the air.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and actually Dan and I talked about that, doing some things like that here. But I'm not sure that that's what you're suggesting.
I guess I'm just saying, I'm asking, should we, you know. We're talking about doing something. I know we haven't defined that yet, but just to have some discussion with program directors about this as well, maybe some producers. I'm just asking.
Well, probably it would be good to have some discussions. We sent, as a follow-up to that, we sent this letter out, I believe, twice, and it went to everybody. The only staff person who sent any kind of response that I saw was Scooter Schrell from KPFT. The only other response we got from producers was the response from USOC, from the Unpaid Staff Committee at WBAI. I think the difficulty is it's hard to get staff to talk about these issues with anybody. I don't entirely understand why. I have theories, but I don't know. So I think it would be good to have some discussions. It doesn't look like we're going to see a lot of staff people being very forthcoming about that. Gail?
I'm here. I was just going to say that I definitely agree that we've got to watch ourselves, because we know that so many of these rules are focused very much on a Pacifica network and anyone else who puts as much truth out there as possible. But I really do feel that we need to look at how we can also fight it at the same time. We can do more than one thing at the same time. And I'm hoping that Mr. Jackson does follow up and does look into the other groups that are fighting this, so that we can join if we feel that that's a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dan Logan?
Yes. Well, first of all, I think not much has been said about the fact that our programmers may bear personal liability, and I think they ought to be quite aware of that, and they have to sign off on that. We just don't know. It's another thing we just don't know about the FCC's policy. But conceivably, that could happen, and it could be very damaging, and it's going to scare people. But maybe they need to be scared now. And I have to say that I think this policy is repressive. It has already crippled us in a way. If you think about all the time we're spending on dealing with this policy, making an implementation of it for all our programmers, and trying to understand it, and spending all our time just trying to button things up. As far as what Phil said, in joining the lawsuits or coming up with another lawsuit on our own, I don't think that's a good approach. For one thing, the big lawsuit now has to do with what happened at the Super Bowl, Janet Jackson and whatever his name was. That was a nasty incident, and I think we probably ought to submit an amicus brief on that. On the other hand, I don't think that ought to be the main way in which we challenge this policy. The best way to do it is to have a conversation with the FCC.